SBS Radio.
1 in 3 of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs experience ear and hearing troubles that can make it hard for them to listen, learn, and talk to others. Hearing Australia's HAPPY program offers free, safe, and simple hearing checks for kids under 6 or not yet attending full-time school. Give your kids happy ears today. Call Hearing Australia on 134 432 or visit hearing.com.au today.
It's that time of the week again where we get to welcome Rae Johnston, Wiradjuri woman and journalist, to yarn all things science and technology. A very good afternoon to you, sis. How are you?
Good afternoon, sis. Not doing too bad in lockdown.
Yeah, me too. Still in lockdown in Melbourne, and you in Sydney. We find ourselves a bit like Groundhog Day, isn't it?
That's it. I'm in Blacktown LGA, and we've been in pretty hard lockdown for so long now that I've actually stopped counting. I just don't care anymore. This is where I live.
I think you've got the right idea to stop counting, sis. I think we're going to be in this for a little while longer just yet. Our first topic of the week, sis, scientists have discovered that the humble blue tongue lizard is actually largely resistant to the venom of the deadly red-bellied black snake. Now, I'm really interested in this story. I do need to share with you that my late brother, Christopher James, had a red-bellied black snake as a pet, sis, you know, as you do. Oh, my goodness, yes. So do tell me more about this story. Yeah, he did. He really did.
Yeah, this is a really surprising finding, actually, and it was revealed after the University of Queensland scientists, they compared the effects of various reptile blood plasmas when it was exposed to the venom of red-bellied black snakes. And they did this because mammal and, in particular, human reactions to the venom have been really heavily investigated. We know what red-bellied black snakes will do to people and other animals, but very little was known about what snake venom does to other reptiles until now. So they thought they'd do some research. And they said that it was a real shock discovering that the eastern blue tongue, along with the shingleback as well, also, they showed resistance specifically to red-bellied black snake venom. No other venoms, no other snakes, just the red bellies. And since their resistance was so specific to just this snake species, they say that it seems like these lizards have evolved a special plasma component, which is known as a serum factor in their blood. And this stops specific toxins in red-bellied black snake venom from clotting the lizard's plasma, which is what would lead to rapid death in most other animals. It's that blood clotting that the venom does. This resistance, they say, doesn't mean they're completely immune, but it would give them a greater chance of survival, and it would allow them to escape from the snake or even fight back. So pretty cool, the older blue tongues. I've got one in my backyard right now.
Oh, that's so deadly, sis. I remember playing with blue tongue lizards when we were kids. That was before my brother graduated to the red-bellied black snake, of course.
We always seem to have one in our garden. We've always had one hanging around since we were kids, and for some reason we've always called them Russell. No matter how many there are, their names are always Russell.
Now we go from talking about blue tongue lizards and red-bellied black snakes to talking about supermarkets, and apparently shoppers, they buy healthier with fruit and vegetables, which are at supermarket entrances. Is this right, sis?
Yeah, this is really interesting. So researchers, they studied a chain of supermarkets over 6 months to see how the layout of the supermarkets affected the behavior of the shoppers in it. And the overall store-wide sale of junk food, it decreased while fruit and veg sales jumped when there were only water and non-food items available at the checkout, and also when a bigger produce section was placed at the store entrance. So, you know, when you're at the checkout and you just look over and go, oh, yeah, all right, I'll grab a Mars bar. If they just get rid of all of the food there and just have water, we're not grabbing that junk food. It's just not happening. We're not seeking it out. It's all impulse purchases. But also having that bigger fruit and veg section right at the store entrance, it puts you in a better frame of mind when you're doing your shopping. You look at it and go, yep, no, that's it. I'm going to be healthy. But there was an exception to this, and it was among adult women.
Oh.
It doesn't change. Women do not change their junk food purchases if it's not at the checkout or if the fruit and veg sale section is right there at the entrance. Mm-hmm. We seem to walk into the supermarket knowing full well that we're getting a full family size block of chocolate and a big packet of chips and maybe some corn chips and some salsa, I don't know, whatever you're feeling like that day. We go in there with a plan to buy that, and the layout of the supermarket doesn't make any difference whatsoever. And there's actually a plan in the UK by the government over there to ban placing unhealthy foods in those prominent places at grocery stores. And the researchers on this study say that that kind of thing could end up improving the diet of the whole population, especially when they've got that fresh produce near the store entrance as well. So I don't know about that. I don't know if it makes a difference for me or not. I tend to go into the shops with a plan. That's for sure.
That's great to hear today in our science and technology segment. I think what I'd like to see, Ray, is that our supermarket exit points where we're at the checkout, instead of all the chocolates and chewing gums and soft drinks that are high in sugar, I'd like to see some fruit and veg maybe placed on those shelves. I think that would be interesting, right?
I reckon that would be great. And I think it would make it a bit easier when you've got all the kids with you as well, so they don't bother you to get them a Kinder Surprise again.
I did that to my mother when I was a child, but the thing for us back in, I'm going to show my age now. Back in the 70s, I'll say, Ray, and the 80s were golden books. Do you remember getting golden books from supermarket too, sis?
I do remember those. That's my pop used to get them for me when we go down the shop. Oh, that's brought back a wonderful memory for me. Thanks, sis.
Oh, too deadly, sis. So now we go from talking about shoppers buying healthier fruit and veg at supermarket entrances to talking about the fact that 1 in 3 people are actually less active during lockdown and its aftermath. How so, sis?
I've been waiting for these studies to come out because I think we've seen two different types of people in lockdown. The people that go, that's it, I'm going to get ripped, I'm going to start lifting weights and eating well and eating healthy, and the people that just curl up under a blanket and go, I'm not moving and you can't make me. So I've been waiting for some kind of data to come out about this, and it's out. And just under 1 in 3 people have seen a decrease in their physical activity in lockdown. And researchers looked at how strict lockdowns and also the easing of restrictions in different areas all around the world have affected physical activity. And they say 29% of people saw a significant decrease in physical activity, but many people did begin lockdown with plenty of exercise. That quickly went downhill as the pandemic dragged on. Only 9% of the people that they've looked at for this study became more active over lockdown. So it's either people trying to maintain where they're at, not doing it at all, and a very, very, very small amount of people becoming more active than they were previously. Where do you fit with there, sis?
I tend to fit on the more unhealthy side of doing less exercise, I have to admit, which I'm really embarrassed about, sis.
Oh, nothing to be embarrassed about. We're just getting through the days, really, whatever you need to do. I find myself dipping in and out. I'll have a week where I get up and I have a stretch and do some yoga and walk the dog and, you know, do some weights. And then I'll have 2 weeks where I just don't move. So, hey, you just got to do what keeps your mind healthy, I reckon, at this stage.
I think so, sis. And with so many thousands upon thousands of people in lockdown right across Australia at the moment in different parts, it's good to hear that people are approaching exercise in different ways. And I've got to admit, I do have an exercise bike sitting over in the corner of my apartment, but it's a bit dusty, sis.
We used to call ours the clothes rack because that's where you hang your coat.
How did you know? Now we go from talking about exercise in lockdown and its aftermath to talking about virtual specialists that have a real impact on rural stroke patients. Do tell me more about this story, please, sis.
Yeah, this one's really exciting. I'm really pleased to share this one with you today. And look, when we're talking about stroke patients, every minute counts when a person has a suspected stroke. And nowhere is time more crucial than in regional areas. And in New South Wales in particular, you're having to travel long distances and a lack of dedicated specialists on the ground, it can mean hours before a patient receives treatment that could save their life. And an initiative that has been overseen by the University of New South Wales in Sydney, their academic staff there, they've cut this time drastically by giving specialists in the city the ability to join patients and rural hospital medical staff as well in a virtual meeting, like a Zoom meeting. And stroke patients in those regional areas can now be diagnosed and administered first-line therapy within an hour instead of hours.
Wow.
And this is just, it's just amazing. And this new system, they're calling it Telestroke, and it connects the stroke specialists in Sydney with one of 12 regional hospitals, their emergency departments in particular around New South Wales. That number is going to grow to 23 by the end of the year. So this program is expanding, and they use a whole bunch of technology for this. They're using high-quality cameras and microphones and artificial intelligence systems. They're using diagnostic scanning and imaging tools, and it's all streaming in real time over a high-speed internet connection.
Wow.
So the specialists and the emergency department registrars, they can work together really quickly to work out if the patient has had a stroke, what kind of stroke it is, and what medical strategy they need to take. And yeah, this is a fantastic development, not just for being able to treat people and save their lives, but also when you set up a platform like this, it benefits the patients, but it also benefits the researchers because you're collecting data on those patients because everything is digital, and that can also be used for future research. So the Telestroke system up and running and doing some great work out there.
Too deadly to hear a positive health story on our science and technology segment, which we do with you every Friday. It's been deadly having you on the program again. Thank you so much, my sister. Till next week, I'll see you then.
Till next week, sis. Thanks for having me.
One in three of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander bubs experience ear and hearing troubles that can make it hard for them to listen, learn, and talk to others. Hearing Australia's HAPPY program offers free, safe and simple hearing checks for kids under 6 or not yet attending full-time school. Give your kids HAPPY ears today. Call Hearing Australia on 134 432 or visit hearing.com.au today.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.